Welcome to the School of Wellbeing. I'm your host, Meg Durham, wellbeing speaker and teacher wellbeing specialist. Before we begin, I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land and waters on which this podcast is being recorded. Hello and welcome to episode 118. When you hear the term coaching, what comes to your mind? Traditionally, when we think of coaching, we think of sports. It's common practice for athletes and teams to have a coach. And yet, when it comes to teaching and learning, coaching is relatively new. In today's episode, I have the joy of chatting with experienced educator and managing consultant at Growth Coaching International, Dan Steele. Dan has taught and held leadership positions in government, Catholic and independent schools across metropolitan Melbourne and remote Western Australia. He is passionate about building cultures of learning, developing aspiring and current leaders, and using coaching approaches to drive improvement in education. Dan is highly regarded for his learner-centered approach, always keeping students, teachers, or leaders at the core of each interaction. His engaging and professional style, together with his passion for coaching, enable him to build positive and trusting relationships with others. In this conversation, we discuss how to bring a coaching approach to teaching, the importance of deeply listening to others, what coaching skills have the greatest impact, and so much more. I hope you enjoy my conversation with Dan Steele. Dan, welcome to the School of Wellbeing podcast.
Thank you very much. It's lovely to be here.
Today, we're going to be talking about coaching skills and how they can be used to help school leaders and teachers improve staff wellbeing. What sparked your interest in coaching?
My interest in coaching. So back in 2015, I had a really amazing principal who first brought in this thing of coaching. Like, I've grown up playing sports. I had sports coaches, I guess like performance coaches. And then my principal at the time when I worked in this primary school, he brought it in for our leadership team. I say brought it in. He really believed in developing other people. And he said, look, if this is something I think we should bring into the school, I need to engage in it. So I'd actually really love if us in the leadership team, we could coach each other. Would anyone like to coach me? And I'm a sucker for like, we have to live out what we say. So I tell people to lead into trying things. So I was like, I'll coach you. I had no idea what I was doing. And it was the first time when I first discovered the growth framework and just a series of like a collection of questions that can guide the conversation. We had this chat and I just watched this man who was really vulnerable talking through his thinking, his big ideas. And I was just like, my gosh, this conversation is so different. And then we flipped and the next day he coached me and I can sort of just talk through different things, right? Like teachers, we can do that. But he asked these really hard hitting questions like that were really supportive and challenging. And I was like, gosh, this is really making me think. So for me, I was hooked from that moment when I just thought you can have this time and space where you get clarity because teaching, we know it can be so, there's so much happening. And I remember walking away being so clear with what is it that's going to best help me help the kids in my class? And I walked away with like two or three things that I could go do. And I went and did it and we had check-ins and stuff. And it was just super powerful. So for me, I was hooked from 2015 from that moment.
And what you're highlighting here, Dan, is the power of coaching and coaching in educational settings where our day-to-day life is like that dance floor. There is always something to do. No educator gets to the end of the day like, oh, I did everything on my list. That day went exactly to plan. It is chaotic. It's urgent. It's high pressure. There is so much going on. So when we can create these pockets of respite where we can settle our nervous system enough to stop, to think, and then do that work of reflection, all of a sudden, the next step becomes so obvious. We can stop the noise and get really clear on that next step. So before we go any further, let's get to definitions. What even is coaching?
Well, it's something that's thrown around a lot. So I've stepped out of schools now. I was an assistant principal and I stepped out and I've joined Growth Coaching International since the end of 2022. We're really lucky in that. And that was the first bit of coaching, professional learning I did was through them. So Christian Van Nieuwenberg is a professor of positive psychology. He's worked with a number of universities and his definition is the one that I always come back to. So it's around in a formal setting, it'd be like a one-to-one conversation that ultimately is about the learning and development of the other person. And you do it in a supportive and challenging conversation. And I say challenging as in not like tough. but it's really about raising their self-awareness and raising their self-responsibility to take action in a really supportive environment using some different skills like active listening, questioning, summarizing. Yeah, and it's normally, in a traditional coaching sense, we'd say one-to-one. So I think that's that key definition, is that one-to-one supportive environment where you get a bit of appropriate challenge using a number of key skills that raises their awareness and makes them actually feel like they can go take responsibility to take those actions.
And really highlighting that in this space of conversation, it is both support and challenge. It's not just about, yes, support, I understand, normalizing. There always is a part of it that is nudging us to a new future, that's stretching us to think of things in new ways.
Yeah, like I just always connect it to brilliant teaching. Like when you nail your lesson, right? Like you're facilitating, it's not actually about you, it's about the kids in your room or, you know, with coaching. It's not about me, it's actually about the person there. And my job is just to work out what's landing for them, what am I picking up that they might need. We try out some questions. And sometimes if you've built up, because it's all based on a really strong relationship and trust, that's when you can then bring in the challenge when it's appropriate. And because you've got that relationship with people now, like I love it when you have a moment and I'll just say, look, so what if I just ask something that's maybe a little challenging? If I've got a good relationship, they'll be like, Dan, I've had a really rough day, not right now. But most of the time they actually say, actually, yeah, I'd really love that. I call it supportive challenge.
Yes, and having that supportive challenge in the safety of a relationship that is robust reminds me of me being a student. The teachers that I worked the hardest for, that's what they did. They created a lot of safety, a lot of support, and they could ask a hard question. And I didn't take it personally. But when there were other people that were having a crack at me, I thought, I'm not even going to listen to you. So really highlighting the importance of relationship safety as we enter these conversations. So with all this in mind, why do you think coaching skills are so important?
At the heart of every single school, I think the core of great education is about relationships and conversations. So if you think of every day as a teacher, the number of conversations that you're having. We know all the like that research around like thousands of decisions, but it's like you have hundreds, if not thousands, of conversations all the time. As a school leader, you're also having a huge number of conversations, and each of those conversations is affected by the relationship you have. So if we know that relationships are the heart of schools, conversations are the heart of schools, if we can have, even if it's just a few better quality conversations that help you get clear about what it is you want to do, or others get clear about what it is that they do need to do or what they don't need to do, Meg. Like that's often a big thing, you know, where you're not going to put your energy. You spoke before about how chaotic and urgent and high pressure. When you said that, I actually thought, well, on the days when we bring a coaching approach, it's not even formal coach, but on the days when we can even like bring a coaching approach, it doesn't feel as chaotic, doesn't feel as intense because we've got that little bit more clarity. And I think I always come back to time's the most precious resource. We don't get it back. So when we think of coaching and coaching skills, if there's something that helps us get more out of our time, I think that's a thing that you need to turn your attention to. So if you're wanting to get more out of your day or like just more quality out of it and reduce stress, improve your well-being, like the research that's continuing to grow and the evidence, particularly around in other organizations outside of education, but also in education, around it affecting people's well-being. I think that's how we should probably then turn and look at and try and say, well, what might this look like in our setting? I think that's so powerful.
And what you're really harnessing there is that power of connection, relationships, communities. And when I walk into schools, that's what I feel. I feel the quality of the connections. I can see the quality of the conversations. There are some schools that I walk into and it feels like I've walked into the pub, like Friday night drinks, when they all gather. They are chatting, there is energy, there is vibe, there is looks over the side of someone else, they're wanting to catch up. There's just so much energy and connection and community in the room. And there are some other spaces that I walk into and think, do you know each other? Like what's sort of going on here? And just really highlighting that these coaching conversations can really help us to amplify connections and community and work towards that biggest barrier that we all have in education, which is time. No one has enough time. There's not enough hours in the day. But with the time we have, can we be a little bit clearer on our priorities? Can we not get stuck in procrastination and overwhelm and trying to assume what everybody else is thinking And it really sounds like it can create not just clarity for the individual, but it can create clarity for the system.
Absolutely. And I think that's an important thing. You asked before about a definition. And so I gave one about, I guess, like formal coaching. The other definition, I guess, to think of is a coaching approach. So it doesn't mean I'm formally coaching you, but in team settings or like when you're in planning meetings or even like talking to parents. So a really powerful thing, and the work that we did at Elder Court Primary School in North Frankston was slowly bringing in a coaching approach. So it's like the elements of coaching, so that the skills or your way of being, like how you show up, you bring those in settings and conversations where it's not formal coaching. But if I had a really irate parent come in and they're trying to advocate for their kid, like doing little things of being aware of the way that I'm sitting, the way that I'm, my tone, if I'm sounding defensive, you know, like that's how my way be. But if I suddenly say, can you tell me a little bit more about that? Or what is it that you'd like to see instead? Now, they're questions that sometimes in coaching conversations I use with coachees, but with parents in parent meetings, asking like, and really deeply listening to hear, what is it that you'd like to see instead? And then me just shutting up and being quiet and letting them talk it through. That's really powerful, or, you know, in team meetings. So I think the big thing listening to you talk just then was about also highlighting this coaching approach. Like you don't have to walk around coaching everyone and you're not there like sitting down, but it's, you just start to bring this way of how you engage in conversations. And I think you're right. It then adds to this connection because people feel, hey, they can trust one another, that they can be themselves, they can show up in a real way, but they also know that people are there to support them and also give them a little nudge when it's needed.
Yes. And I love this concept of way of being. Tell us more.
It's based on Carl Jung with the approach he called it around that way of being. And if you think of the work that's happening across with, especially trauma-informed practices, so it's your way of being, pretty much how you show up in conversations. A big part of that is if we want to do that supportive challenge, the thing I sometimes ask people is, what's it like to be on the other side of you in a conversation? And when I was a new leader, I thought it was about, you know, being the one that could tell everyone what to do and having to do all the talking. Like, that's no. Nah. So instead, it was more about, you know, are you turning up just looking at your watch all the time? Are you looking around? You're not present. So it really has to do with the way that we're turning up, how we are, like our humility. Even if we think of ourselves as a coach or, you know, a leader, like your confidence. Do you believe that you can actually come in and you don't have to take over the meeting? You can actually just listen to hear people's ideas. Or if there is a direction that you need to go, do you feel confident to say, well, this is where we're going? Your sensitivity to the group, like you might have some different cultural differences that you need to be aware of. If you're not aware of that, then that affects the way that you show up in the conversation. So it's based on Jung's original ideas. And you can probably hear there as well, a big focus around like that unconditional positive regard. You know, you always hold a belief because you know more about your world and your experiences. I don't know. You're the expert of your world. I'm not. So my job is to try and find out as much as I can about what you're going through or like the things that you're wanting to get. And then my job is just to ask some really, hopefully, helpful questions so that you can then work out what would best help you.
And it's such a beautiful invitation for us all to think about, who are we being in this conversation? How are we showing up in this conversation? Because we may know some really great skills or we may have this awesome question, but if we're not in connection with ourselves and there's no congruence, it may not land.
There's like four key coaching skills, especially through the work. Like if you pretty much look at any coaching research, it really comes down to around, so listening, questioning, summarizing and paraphrasing. And Christian Van Nieuwenberg does it, talks a lot about noticing. So I think teachers, they have a superpower in how they notice, like those micro moments and things that are working, or, you know, that kid that's wriggling and you're like, does he need to get up or does she need to move around more? But I think the thing with the questioning aspect or the listening aspect is, as teachers, we remember what it's like when a kid's sharing a response. You're just waiting for them to stop talking so you can then say, yeah. And so what we're then going to do is we're going to move into this activity. Whereas if you bring a bit of a coaching approach, I guess it's, you got to balance it. I want to move on in the lesson, but not waiting for them, like not just sitting there waiting for them to stop talking. You're actually listening. What is it that they're sharing? And then, you know, you can just do a quick summary or you're just a little bit more present. You go, yeah, that's right. And then you can, all right, let's move on. So I think there's some really, every time I think of any good lesson that worked, I can see really clear connections to some key coaching skills that I now use every day, but that really did actually help me when I think about it as a teacher or as a leader.
Yeah, I remember one of my senior teachers who always asked us questions, and there were questions that were not in the textbook. And it used to infuriate me because why are you asking me these questions? Because they're not in the textbook. If they're in the textbook, then I'll be able to tell you the answer that you want to hear. And now I look back and I thought, wow, by the end of the year, we knew our content because she made us think. And as humans, we don't always like to think.
Yeah, and I think the biggest feedback just in the last 3 weeks that I've had from a number of principals and school leaders is they really value the privileging the time to think. Just making that time and, you know, listening to you just now. The best lessons that I used to teach were when there was less of me and more of the kids, or, you know, staff, professional learning workshops. There was less of me, there was more of them thinking, connecting it to themselves. And they don't need me to tell them everything. Like, my job was just to listen and hear the ideas and connect it. You know, you're really a facilitator.
So what do you think are some of the myths when it comes to coaching?
I love it when we're in workshops and someone's like, yeah, I've been coached. And then you really find out, similar to when I was coached in rugby and swimming, I had wonderful coaches, but there was a lot of just do this. So you need to do this. I'll direct you. I'll be really directive. And I'll tell you, this is the next thing you need to work on. So there's a common myth is it's done to you, and that the coach is, there's a really big, I guess, misconception around the giving of advice. Michael Bungay Stainer is a global expert and thought leader, I guess, in space. Not I guess, he is. And he talks about an advice monster. So a lot of people think coaching is about I just tell me what to do. I make someone else like me based on my experiences and I'll just give advice and tell them what to do. Coaching is the complete opposite. It's actually about the more you can make it about the other person, and you bring that facilitative approach where you're asking really good questions because you know they're the expert in their area, and it's not doing anything to someone. It's actually being along, sitting alongside them. Jim Knight talks about the partnership principles, that idea of we're in this together. So it's not me here with the status saying I know it all. It's actually about, the biggest misconception is that it's not actually about the coach. It's actually about the person doing the work.
Yes, that is so true, that we can all fall into these traps of just, if you just did it like this, then your life would be easier and my life would actually be easier too. And really getting into that trap of treating people the way that we like to be treated instead of moving towards treating people the way that they like to be treated and need to be treated.
Yeah. Our executive director, Chris Munro, he does a lot of this thinking around these, like he calls it they talk about a continuum of learning conversations. And the big thing when he's talking about that is he says, people like to put on their jacket. They like to be really leaderly. He's like, I'm being a leader, or I'm bringing this coaching approach as a leader, put on my jacket, and then I just tell everyone what to do. And you watch it as people dig into this leadership. They actually realize it's not about that. So they bring this really interesting, like, coaching as a way of leading. You realize it's less about you and more about the others. So yeah. As you can hear, it's such a powerful thing, and I think it's so transferable to the work we do in classrooms, with our leadership teams, with schools, with networks. So, yeah, I think it's really powerful.
It sounds so powerful. And it also sounds that as we develop our coaching skills, our coaching way of being, our coaching approach, that we're also learning so much about ourselves in the process, that we're learning that, okay, this is a time not to talk. This is a time to talk. This is a time to ask if they would like some advice or ask about a question, and really be mindful of how we're showing up in these conversations and not going into that autopilot of just do what I say, I've got all the answers, let's move on.
Yeah, and so what you were just talking about there is the active skill of noticing. So, you know, like focused attention. It's a completely reciprocal relationship. I coach people, and every single time I coach people, I'm learning stuff from them, and it's literally every time. So whilst they walk away and they're like, and normally I like to find out what's become clear or what's been helpful or what they're feeling more energized about, and they share some really amazing feedback. And then at the same time, I'm sitting there just going, oh my gosh, like I've discovered so many different things from this one conversation. So you're right. It's such a reciprocal relationship and process that you can do. I even hate saying the word process because it makes it sound really cold. But when you're engaging with people, both people are learning. One person might be doing the talking, but you know, we're both actually learning.
And then it's a genuine learning conversation.
Yeah, that's exactly right. When it's all working well and we're not feeling under the pump from all the different things that are intervening with us within a school day, yeah, you do. You walk away really clear.
And what we're also doing is building the capacity for educators and school leaders to notice self. Because as you said, as educators, we are exceptional at noticing. We can tell who's had an argument. We can tell who needs to go to the toilet. We can tell who's just broken up with someone. Like, we know. We know sometimes before the students even know what's going on. However, there can be this blind spot when it comes to noticing self, because we're so hyper-focused on everybody else's needs, what's going on in the external environment, that when it comes to self, what do I need? That can be really challenging. that's that hard thinking.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. Like a lot of the work by Daniel Goleman around emotional intelligence, so, you know, he often talks about it has to start with self-awareness before you can move into social awareness and relationship management. You have to be able to actually be aware of yourself. You have to be able to then manage yourself. And then you start to look at the ways that you can connect that with your relationships and your networks and actually manage those relationships.
And so when it comes to all the skills, you've mentioned different skills today, which ones do you think teachers and school leaders listening could start playing with?
So let's play to strengths, right? So noticing. So a big thing I'd suggest to start with the noticing, and that is you just spoke just now about what do you notice about yourself? So you might do, instead of going the classic teacher thing of saying, okay, so when I'm not working at my best, what am I noticing? So you might start by saying, so when my lessons go really well, or when that meeting goes really well with the parent, or when that at the gate, when the parent says, hey, do you have a sec? When they work really well, what do you notice you're doing? What do you notice that you're feeling? Or what do you notice you did before you got to the gate or before the lesson? I used to know my best lessons were I'd make sure that I turned up slightly earlier so that I wasn't sitting there playing around with the technology, because if I mucked up and my projector wasn't working or the things weren't connected, then I was more stressed, which meant that I wasn't at the door greeting the kids, getting a read on them to say which ones had their shoulders up like this because they'd had a rough lunchtime. You know, so something as simple as we'll just turn up 2 minutes earlier. So I'd say start with the noticing and start with be kind to yourself. Start with when it's working really well. Like that's that solutions focused approach. You know, we're not ignoring the problem, but we're saying, well, let's spot, no matter how small it is, what's working really well. Geez, what happens if we just do that a little bit more often? Because I don't know either way. If you just go look at the things that are not working, I don't know how helpful that can be at times, especially given, you know, time's finite. So yeah, I'd start noticing what's working really well. What are those things that you're doing that you're in control of, or the things that you're noticing you're feeling? And then just see, okay, so what might I do to try and apply that into this next situation?
What a powerful idea for educators to think about. What does good look like for me?
Well, do you know what, Meg? I think it's what does good enough? Because don't get me wrong, I'm a recovering perfectionist. But the thing that's really helped me is there's some things that I have to do. Like if I'm turning up to this podcast, I should like out of 10, I probably want to be operating at a 9 or a 10 out of 10, right? I don't want to be turning up and doing a 5 out of 10. But some things, your good enough looks very different to what the good enough looks like if you're trying to do, you know, a 9 or a 10 out of 10, right? Like, so it's being aware of what does good enough look like, or yeah, what you just said, what does good look like?
And how much relief is there in that question of like, what does good enough look like? I can't be 10 out of 10 at all the things. And for so many educators listening, reforming people pleasers, reforming perfectionists, reforming producers, like all the things we're constantly trying to unlearn, and then we learn again and then we unlearn, this battle of trying to always be on top of things, to give ourselves that permission to be human, to take a deep breath and just think, in this situation, what's good enough? And the ironic piece of this is students don't really care about all the other bits and pieces. That's not even in their frame of reference. They're not thinking about all the things we're thinking about. What they care about is our presence.
Can I share something that's sitting on my desk? I wasn't planning on this. So when I finished up as AP at the school, and a kid came up, this family came up and presented me. They'd made like this frame thing. It has like an LED light. It says, Mr. Steele, most valuable vice principal. But the thing that struck me, what you just said, was I was there like trying to think of like the community engagement, my stakeholder, like how am I connecting with the families? Like, am I creating this really innovative learning and teaching model? They presented that when I was leaving the school, and they said, thank you so much for every day you smiled and you just asked us how we're going as we came through the gate. I'm there thinking of all this other stuff. And for them, it was this guy like sometimes made our day better because he greeted us and just knew our names and smiled. So I'm like, you know, we're so tough on ourselves, and sometimes the impact we're actually having, you often don't know. It's actually quite the simple stuff, isn't it?
Yeah. And this really is full circle when it comes to coaching, is that coaching allows us to remember what's important. It allows us to connect to self. It allows us to connect to others in more meaningful ways. And what would be possible for school communities if a coaching approach became the norm?
You're so right. And I just worked with some principals at a workshop last week, and the big focus was on how do you build coaching cultures? What are all the conversations that are happening in your school? What are the ones that you could bring more of a coaching approach to? What are the ones you're already bringing a coaching approach to? And then which are the ones that you really want to focus on that could have the biggest impact right now? Because you're right, like so many of them said, oh, we just want it to be the way that we do it here. Great. Where's it already happening? Let's do a little bit more of that.
Yes. And so from your experience, What have you noticed in the staff and schools that you've worked with as they take this coaching approach?
So I'll talk most recently to when I was at Aldercourt Primary School. So a big focus that I wanted to bring when I started was bringing coaching approaches in across the different work that we did. I formally coached the middle leaders. And then what we started doing is bringing in coaching approach like to our improvement teams, to planning team meetings. The thing I loved watching, it started off with them making fun of me in some meetings where I realized I often would say, tell me more about that. Or, what would that look like? And they started doing it back to me when I'd share something. And so the thing that I loved was they realized certain short little sentences, little questions actually helped meetings stay more on track. So then they could finish on time or early. And they went home. So people kept coming up to me saying, thanks so much. It's so good finishing up right on time or early. Like we get home, I'm getting to see my family. I saw a change in confidence in the leaders. So their confidence to be able to not have to be the one that controls everything. So I remember hearing that from all the middle leaders saying, it's so good. I just go in and I know that I can just ask some questions or I can say, I'm not sure. What do you think about this? And I saw a change in their leadership confidence. I saw a change in the way that they were communicating. They enjoyed, like, this might sound silly, but they just enjoyed work. Like, schools can be stressful. They enjoyed work more. They wanted to do the work. They saw themselves as a leader. So many of them quite still new. So they suddenly saw themselves and they were like, yeah, I can do this. And the best thing was when I left, two of the learning specialists then stepped up and replaced me as assistant principal. And I remember talking to them afterwards, sort of slightly hoping, there was a bit of ego, slightly hoping that they're like, oh, Dan, what do you think? And they were like, no, we're fine. We're all good. And I was like, oh, okay. But it was a sign of success. So for me, there was an aspect for seeing the leaders and the team start to change in the way that they spoke and questioned and actually got really clear. The direction to connect it to students is they started getting really clear on what it was that they were going to do to help their students. So then at the same time, we started to see the student learning start to increase in the areas that we focused on because we knew if we got really clear about, well, what's that going to look like? If we're doing this and we can't do something else, is this the one that we're most energized by? The areas where we pointed our spotlight for improvement, we saw improvement. So it was really great. You then start to see student learning going up. Importantly, I say student learning, the student engagement. We wanted people to be participating and actually wanting to engage in the learning. So for us, it was, we also saw kids actually turning up, wanting to be engaged as well. So I think that was the big shift. And look, you know, that was only a few years. And, you know, you need to continue to have people champion the work so that it can get embedded as well. But it was just awesome to see. And I loved watching it. It came as it filtered through.
Yes. And there is so much potential there when everybody's engaged in a learning process. Then there's more learning happening. And then there's more energy. There's more uplift. There's more confidence. There is so much available to us as we approach this coaching approach because it is different to the traditional approach of teaching. And teaching and learning, we've come from an origin of you sit there and listen. I am the font of all knowledge. You just have to listen to me and then you'll be as smart and clever as me. Our role has changed. There is information everywhere. There's too much information, like what's even real, what's not real these days. And moving towards this more collaborative, engaged, exciting approach to learning.
Yeah. And I think also collaborative leadership, because I think a big thing when I was just reflecting on what I just shared, a big part of that too is it sounds really lovely. It was like it was hard work and we had to be really, really consistent with it. But it's also that collaborative leadership you need to bring is some days I was, you know, we'd booked in a coaching chat with the middle leaders, something happening outside of school or something had kicked off in school. And that day the coaching conversation wasn't going to be affected then. So we had to be confident enough to say, well, we'll reschedule. And if you get a pattern where people keep rescheduling, that's another thing. But you also need, it goes back to that idea of that unconditional positive regard. So just because it's in your calendar, do you actually still need to do it today if it's not going to be effective for the person that's there? So that was a big part too, was always having to do that daily juggle of saying, is this the right time? Is this going to best serve them? And if it is, great, let's jump into it. But if not, well, is there a better time that we can do to help you?
Oh, Dan, you have given us so much to think about. To wrap up this beautiful conversation, I'd love to invite you to finish four sentences. Are you up for that?
Sure am.
I am inspired by?
I'm inspired by the teachers and leaders that I get the privilege to listen to and talk with each week.
When life feels hard?
Ask yourself, what would I say to a friend? And then say that to yourself.
An underrated skill is?
Holding a pause or a silence.
And I'm looking forward to?
I'm really looking forward to, we're doing a lot more of this work around coaching as a way of leading. And I'm really looking forward to seeing the impact that happens, the schools and the different leaders that we work with. So I'm really excited with that because it's already seeing some huge potential. So I can't wait.
Oh, Dan, I am so excited about this coaching space in schools because I think it's been the missing piece. We've had so much different information coming at us, so many different initiatives where coaching and quality conversations are the glue. That's what is going to keep us in schools as a community, navigating the inevitable ups and downs. And it is so powerful. And it gets me really excited to think about what would the future of education be if we approached conversations in this skillful, aware way. It is just brilliant. So thank you for your work and thank you for being guest on the School of Wellbeing podcast.
My absolute pleasure. Thank you so much.
I thoroughly enjoyed chatting with Dan and I hope this conversation has inspired you to think about the ways a coaching approach could benefit you and your school community. To learn more about Dan and Growth Coaching International, see the show notes for more details. In the big sea of podcasting, the School of Wellbeing is a little fish. If you find value in these conversations and would like more teachers to be tuning in, here are four ways you can support the show. Subscribe and follow on your podcast app. Share this episode with a colleague. Leave a five-star rating or write a short review. Honestly, it doesn't have to be a well thought out and profound review. Just something simple like, I liked it, thank you. To learn more about the ways that I can help you and your school community thrive, visit my website, openmindeducation.com. There you can book me to speak or download my free 5-step energy guide. You can find all the links from today's episode at openmindeducation.com/episode118. Thank you for listening to this episode of the School of Wellbeing. Until next time, take care and take deliberate action.